That was the highlight of my trip so far, I must say.
It was rather taking
over right here. Now I'm reliving this in my mind, and I'm thinking about, okay.
Happy thought.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for everyone for sticking around. I've got the anchor leg, so I'm going to do the best to get it done in time. So what I'm going to be talking about is building a national database of radon data in collaboration with EPA. This was a pilot project that we did to see if it's even feasible to have a national database. So a little background about radon and why we care about it. Radon is a natural breakdown product of uranium. It comes up through the soil, through cracks in the earth, and then through your foundation, and gets trapped in your home, and then people inhale it, and it causes some problems. It's actually the leading cause of lung cancer after smoking and affects about 21,000 deaths per year, according to EPA estimates. And EPA says it's found all over the U.S. They say every state has high levels, and even 1 in 15 homes is expected to have elevated levels detected. So one of the things that the Federal Radon Action Plan suggested to EPA is work with CDC and develop some sort of way to show how you're reducing the effects of radon exposure. So it's been difficult because there's varying regulations between different states as far as radon data and gathering it. Nothing is standardized between states or even within states. So it's been kind of a challenge. So that was our question. Is it even feasible to build this national database of radon test data? So we decided that the best way to answer the question was to do a pilot test and see how it goes and if it's possible to maybe scale up to a national level. So some of the things that we needed to consider about the data, of course, is what's available, how compatible are they, and then, of course, quality data. So our pilot testing procedure started, first of all, with reviewing some past work that had been done. There was a radon task force that helped develop suggest some core data elements that they thought were important. And then New Jersey has a very robust program. And they also did a collaboration with EPA where they developed this web portal where they could post their data and then make it available to whomever they would like, but it's not publicly available. So through their process, they came up with some data elements, too, that they thought were very important and kind of delineated which ones they considered required and optional, and then also developed an XML schema for data transfer. And so this work that had previously been done had formed the basis for our pilot project. So then our next step was forming a work group, and so we enlisted some of these folks that had been involved in some of these other projects, and then also for the Environmental Public Health Tracking Program, we have states that already provide us with environmental and health data. So we enlisted some of their help, and it was all voluntary, and we had 6 states that participated in this pilot. And so the next step was then to talk about the data elements. You know, what can everyone provide for the pilot? So we came up with 59 elements that were standardized that everyone said there were 8 required that everyone said that they could provide, and then the other 51 were considered optional. And some of the required ones would be things like, you know, the county or the zip code, what the value was of the test result, and then optional ones would be things more like the building purpose or what type of foundation there was. And then the next step was talking about how we were going to get the data and how it was going to be transferred. So we decided that we'd use the format that New Jersey had developed and the common schema and let everyone use that as their basis, but then we had modified it a little bit for the pilot. And then we also had 2 transfer mechanisms available. They could either submit it the normal way that they would normally submit their environmental health data, or they could, because of New Jersey already having this exchange network set up, that we would just go and take the data from there and download it ourselves. So then once we have the data, we have to think about, you know, is it good data? We need to make sure that we received what they sent. So there's a big validation process. Some of it is automated. Some of it is a manual data validation process. And then once we have the data, we want to calculate a measure because we want to make sure that we're providing information eventually that is useful and could be used for public health action. So the measure that we came up with for the pilot that we could use calculate from the data that we were able to get was calculating the elevated radon level prevalence, which is the number of tested households with elevated radon levels, which is above the EPA action level of 4 picocuries per liter. So we did the pilot, and at the end of last year, we were able to receive a combined total of over 60 years of data, which equaled about 700,000 unique test results from the various states. And some states were even able to provide 21 years of data. Some provided less, but then other states had more data that they had available. So we had quite a range of states that participated and were able to provide data to us. So here's an example of when we calculated the prevalence of all the elevated tests. We broke it down by year, state, county, and zip code were available. And then we calculated the annual percent of all tests or test results that were above that EPA action level of 4 picocuries per liter. So this is just a table to kind of show the range of test results that we received, whether of the elevated ones. And then the two maps that you see would be an example of how, if we put it on the tracking network, eventually make it available to the public, this would be a way that we could show the data by county. You know, if you wanted to compare how many elevated tests there were back in 1993 to 20 years later to 2013, you'd be able to compare the map side by side and just kind of, it's just a way to visualize the data. So some of the lessons we learned during this whole process were, you know, things that worked, things that didn't work, things that we'd recommend differently for next time. So when looking at the data elements, we decided that the ones that we used for the pilot were appropriate, and then we could probably even expand them for next time. Even though county and zip code level weren't ideal, we'd rather get finer resolution data. At this time, it wasn't available. And then we found that transporting the data through our normal tracking process was pretty easy, non-problematic, whereas going and downloading the data from the data exchange network did have some challenges. It was pretty time-consuming. We had to do some multiple downloads to get all the data. And then also we found that once it was submitted, there were a lot of cleaning that had to be done, which would have been better done before they submitted the data. So that's something that we'd look at going forward, is maybe adjusting the schema so that it could, you know, kick out some of the data that weren't matching some of the parameters that we had set before submitting. And then also we found that we wanted to create more national measures, but since we didn't have, there were some issues as far as aggregating the data, that's something we have to look at going forward, because there's multiple tests per homes and some other issues in order to calculate other measures that we'd have to think about. So in conclusion, we felt that the pilot was a, you know, successfully showed a way to transfer this new data source and integrate it from multiple sources into one source. And it seems possible that we could standardize test data and make this available to the public eventually and bring in more states and have it to a national level. But, of course, any participants are going to need to be able to use our established data standards. And then also we'd like to have a consistent transfer protocol, so it makes it easier to get it from multiple different states. So in the short term, looking forward, we'd like to include more states in the next phase, and then also potentially partner with state and national labs to get the data and then make it available to some states who don't even have that data. And then a little longer term in the future, we'd like to explore adding geological data so that we could look at radon exposure potential. And just want to thank everyone involved, especially our six states that were, again, participating in this voluntarily. We really appreciate their work.
Okay, for question and answers, there's a microphone right there. Appreciate if you used it. And I'll do mine and open with the first one. So, this is kind of for Jim and over to Cliff, too, I think. So, the EHR is the holy grail of all data, isn't it?
Yes.
Everything
yes.
We could ever want to do public health right. Is an EHR.
Exactly right.
Have we done any kind of environmental scan to see how much information is actually in all of the fields in the EHRs?
No, I have not, Jim.
What's your guesstimate? Yeah, is there a guesstimate? I mean, are there big gaping holes? Because I think one of those might be Cliff's data that are out there that we're working really hard to integrate EHRs, and I'm not sure that all the information's in the EHRs.
Yeah, so no, it's not.
Could you go to the microphone? Maybe?
Yeah, sure. So, I'll face this way. I'll speak collectively for public health. I think we're understanding that there is much information we would like to have that is not in electronic health record systems. It's not there for a variety of reasons. One of them might be it's not that important for a doctor or a nurse to ask and then spend time entering into an electronic health record system. And I've been cognizant of NIOSH's activity around occupation and industry. That would be a gold mine. And I think everybody recognizes that, but it's also something that, you know, and there's a number of complications. But is that, as far as an environmental scan, I'm not exactly sure how feasible that is, but many of you have probably heard about these electronic case reporting activities or these distributed query activities, and I think as we do these activities, we're going to learn more and we'll maybe form a more feasible request to EHR vendors and providers as in terms of what to include.
Right. So as a side note, you know, because my business is communicable disease, and I'm really happy to get an address. So, but there's other stuff.
So, Jim, I probably should step away from my how many of you have ever used an electronic health record? All right. So, are there any electronic health record vendors in the audience? Are there any attorneys or reporters in the audience? Is there anybody from the state of Maryland who knows me in the audience? All right. So, since there's no, the likelihood that I can keep my job after these
things. At this time, I should remind you that it isn't recorded.
Okay. Saving me from myself once again. Thank you, Jim. So, I use electronic health records a lot. I see patients, and I use electronic health records, and I've worked with a bunch of them. They are incredibly frustrating for anybody who's used them before. First of all, why do electronic health records exist? They exist in order to bill patients. The treatment of patients has been historically a sort of a secondary concern with all due respect, I mean, if you're a clinician and you're working with electronic health records, probably the expression on your face varies anywhere from grr to please, give me something else. And the reason for that is that they're administrative records that were designed originally for billing, for scheduling and billing. They were not designed for patient care. So that's one problem, is that the folks who built these things built them with the purpose of being complete and meeting the requirements of the billing department, which means you have to have all the checkboxes that you have to have in order to generate a bill that will be paid by Medicaid, Medicare, or private insurers are there, and they are very accurate and they are very complete. Anything that has to do with patient care, I don't want to say that it's a secondary consideration, but it's really not as well thought out in most cases as the billing part. So that's point one. Point two is that if you look at meaningful use is the federal government is trying to coerce the vendors into putting stuff there that they need. And meaningful use is for clinical purposes, it's not for public health purposes. So
incentivizing the coerce. I think that's what they say.
Sorry. I once again saving me from myself. Thank you. But really meaningful use was there, and the goal of meaningful use is really targeted around improved clinical outcomes, not public health outcomes. So, for example, there's not stuff there on occupational history, although I'd love to see that. There's not stuff there on history of residence. I think a lot of us would love to see something that is not where you live now, but where have you lived before this, because that's part of this. Oh, my pocket is ringing, excuse me. But I think the environmental scan would be, is challenging, frankly, for exactly those reasons. And I don't think, frankly, and this is my personal view, not the view of the Maryland Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, my employers, the state of Maryland, or any other person living or dead. Public health is very late to the table in terms of thinking about how to do this, and we are a very small voice. Getting vendors to change electronic health records is really the club that they have is one, the federal government, and the ONC, the Office of the National Coordinator and Meaningful Use Rules, and number two, the big hospital systems. And if you're not one of those, getting them to change part of their record is really challenging. So I think our best strategy is to think about the two or three things that we think are absolutely essential and try to get those into the electronic health record, rather than trying to come up with a wide litany of things that we think would be really nice for public health purposes. I think one of the challenges for the public health community is that it has not come together to think of a coherent strategy for trying to essentially define, I would say, at the most, five elements that are the most important elements to have in any clinical record, And if you could get five elements of the electronic health record and get doctors and providers to ask those five questions, that, I think, is for me the holy grail.
It's not mine, but no, that's fine. It's an interesting perspective. And I'm just a moderator, so I won't share. Please, other questions, or I'm going to keep you here. I'm going to keep you here, Wes. If you need it yourself.
I'm just going to, for organ health, I was interested with your, I think the advantage of your system would be individual level data. So I guess I'm kind of wondering what indicators you'll be looking at, because then if you like compare that to, you know, the USDA has a food desert locator. So I feel like if you did zip-code level data, there would be some duplication of effort. So I guess I was just unclear on what exact actual indicators and outcomes you'd be looking at with the alcohol, tobacco, and firearm data.
Done so far has been with VMI, individual weight data, using the DMV. We don't have much access to small geography health outcome data, which is really inhibiting our efforts there. In terms of duplicating efforts with USDA, I feel that we are unique because we have more of a robust data system. It is address level. You know, we use the address of the outlets, the network, the street network connectivity, and households, which I don't think that USDA has access to. I think they just have track level, and that's it. Where we're like just doing point to point.
I have a follow-up question for Mary, actually. It's a very brief one. You said you collected the database from the DMV. Can you just do that?
Surprisingly, you can. Give away their data. I think they charged us maybe, it was less than $1,000 for 5 years of data. So that includes most everyone who has an ID. So I think we are missing some populations, but yeah, it's shocking. As I said before, it was refreshing to collect non-health data.
Yeah, I need another one. I can do this. This is kind of for Scott and Wagon. I get excited when I see public health leveraging these tools we built for one thing to do other things. And my question, I guess, for both of you is the integration. For you in particular, Scott, when we talk about your on-call system, which I never even thought about building an on-call module using, but it makes sense for a lot of reasons. If you were to get a case referral through there, can you create a notebook on your system? How does that work?
Yes, because the Maven system is being used by the epidemiologist and the surveillance people. So if you do get a call from a doctor, the on-call people, like for instance, if it's a group A strep or a meningitis unknown type of event, the epidemiologist on call will create the event and it goes into a workflow for immediate disease follow-up, and the on-call epidemiologist would then get it and start working on it. Does that make sense? Or if you have a patient who's calling to say they've got a mom with a kid with rabies.
I hate
that
kid with
rabies. Yeah, that would be a call.
Measles. So the mom calls and says, like, my kid has measles or was at a hospital and is a possible contact to a measles case. They can create a contact with them, or they can give them the appropriate recommendations for follow-up or exclusion. But yeah, we use it where it goes back and forth. So we have linked on-call events to actual cases of disease as well. So it kind of has kind of shown up the whole thing. It's really allowed the communication tool with the general public and just having everything be so centralized and having your fingertips right in the system to search the surveillance system when you've got a person on the phone and go, you know, we don't have a case of disease. But Yeah, exactly. That's what we built it for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And Quagon, your refugee module, do you identify a disease in the refugee module as a creating your CNETs or your disease surveillance system doesn't create a separate kind of case?
Yeah.
Because
it's a patient-based system, so if the refugee coming on, they have this TB, they have to report it in CDS, and that depends on the local health department, because they are the ones to report. So we have that same person maybe showing up there. Or the core is the same.
Thanks.
I thought those were great presentations overall. Anybody else have a question? Jeremy. Okay, come to the microphone.
I was struck by your comment, by your saying, well, those aren't my reasons. It would not be my top request for meaningful use criteria for EHRs. And I was sitting back there thinking, well, why is it so difficult for public health to come up with that? And I think with what we want from EHRs, and I think I would answer that question by saying surveillance has innumerable purposes. Everything from identifying a rabies case to new outbreaks to counting cases, doing transfer. Anyway, we do a lot of things with surveillance, and it's not just paying a bill or something. It's not as simple as complicated as Medicaid is. It's not as simple as that. So my question for you, and I don't know what we want from EHRs. I haven't been able to figure that out, get it down to five things. But I'd love to know what you want.
Okay. Well, and I'll tell you, because you asked it. And there's, as many of you know, tons of discussion around platform development and other things that are asking these very questions. What I want initially is enough information to have an actionable public health response. I want enough information on what was being reported. And I'm talking specifically to electronic case reporting for communicable disease right now. Stuff that allows, that gives my staff enough time to make those contacts and be able to do in public health. I want enough information to marry from electronic health records to a laboratory where we get many electronic lab reports. And I want that to be seamless because I have a lot of manual intervention, so I need enough in both records to make sure I can match them accurately. And then I want to plan for the ability to reach back and ask other questions depending on what the condition is. There's discussions on something called structured data capture where a referral is received by public health and we can work on it, but then we can return a form asking for further questions. That we hope is somewhere in the electronic health record, but probably not in a place that's easily accessible, and it may take some manual intervention. So that's what I'm kind of hoping for. Here we go. Tell me about the pipe.
So, you know, so I've given this a lot of thought. I have to say, you know, the hardest thing that I sort of make light of this, but billing companies are really good at finding people, right? And hospitals are really good at finding people. If they didn't have the information that they needed in the electronic health record to bill people, electronic health records wouldn't exist. So, you know, I take your point about this, but frankly, all the information you need to contact people is already in the electronic health record or in the administrative record that goes along with it. So that's not, you know, I mean, I take your point about this, I'm not sure I agree with you completely about this, because I think...
Well, then you're wrong.
Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure that they can find people no matter where
absolutely.
They are.
Absolutely, that's what they
need. And so, I need to know where those fields are, but I'm pretty sure that those fields exist, except maybe an email, and it would be nice to have an email address in there.
Those fields are very, very lacking in electronic laboratory.
In electronic laboratory reports, that's fine, but talking about the electronic health record, those fields are there because otherwise those guys don't get paid, and if they don't get paid, they're out of business.
So they're part of our target.
So that's part of it. I think the challenge is thinking about what do we need for public health purposes that isn't asked in an electronic health record or that we feel is critically important for purposes of public health that isn't in there right now. Because I think, I mean, two
I would do it occupational.
So I think occupation and industry, no, seriously, I actually think people's workplaces, and for this you can actually blame physicians. Thank you very much, because we never asked that question, and we ought to be, and that's fine. But I think, you know, so I've sort of thought about this. If I had an electronic health record that had reliable occupation and industry and reliable housing, you know, where people live, address history, and even that might be in the administrative record that follows, because people in some cases have history of their property, in some records I think they do because it's where they've been billed in the past. Again, it's not necessarily in the health record, but it's in the administrative record that goes along with it. I think, you know, for us, I think the question is, and I'm serious about this, I think we as a public health field need to think about what are the five questions, and I'm just picking five arbitrarily, but I think we got no more than five coming to us.
Scott wants six.
I'm not saying. Yeah, I mean, every program has five different questions. I mean, from vaccine preventable to enteric to ARBO. So to get five questions that cover 70 to 90 diseases,
you're never going to get that in an electronic health record.
I know. I agree.
Well, then, thank you for raising your hand.
Okay, so actually, I think a lot of variables may be in the history note, but how do you do that, make it into a variable? It's a hard question, and it's very expensive, because you cannot do text search, right? So actually, I was noticing about the public case reporting online. I think to build this, it's really expensive one for public health, and it's really not there yet.
Absolutely, and I haven't sensed a really consistent commitment from
right.
Federal partners to funding.
So I think the easiest way right now in New York State, we have health information exchange. So really, it's a network of the providers. So each one, they have a portal. So they have all the virtual medical record in their portal. So. And we are trying to work with HIE, see if we have a public health authority to access to the portal. So whenever we get a report,
that's an approach.
We access to the portal instead of visit the doctor's office, get the chart. We just sit in front of our desk, access to the portal, and we get all the information we can fill out for our case reporting and the supplements.
And that's much cheaper. Yes. Okay. More questions? Anybody want to shout out anymore? Okay. Thank you, everybody.